It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in,
so we're
and I ask
out
that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m.
I turn my mic
Eastern
off.
Standard
echo.
Time for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The madness grows in this sick society. Posers laud shallow youth for their empty fads. Phonies seek out vain celebrities for instruction. Slaves glorify globalist parasites for their stolen wealth and power. Politicians are puppets, not leaders. Sheep wear masks and accept deadly vaccines. In these dark times, the wise must lead us. So we call the Wisdom Circle. Each week, Scorpio and Giuseppe will call upon the sages, the learned, the pragmatic, to discuss the great problems and distill the great solutions. Here is the leader of the Wisdom Circle, Scorpio.
Okay, welcome to the Wisdom Circle. Today we have a very special guest. I'm here with Giuseppe and Patrick Rabbit of Revolution Radio, a reclusive figure, but a man of wisdom. Patrick, hello, how are you, sir?
Hey, Scorpio, how you doing? You're too
doing
kind.
Right.
I don't know how much a man of wisdom I am, but very kind of you to invite me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And Patrick, I just want to kind of ask you, like, maybe start from the beginning. How did you hook up with this motley crew known as Revolution Radio? What was the genesis of all that?
Well, it was around March of 2013, I guess. And I just started casting about, looking around for things to watch and listen to. And I kind of wound up here. And so I started in the chat room and I started meeting people. And
I'm hearing your monitors, Patrick.
Let me see something. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm hearing a bad echo too. I am going to go into Skype and turn down my, well, or maybe I can do it.
Do you have headphones?
Well, let's see. How's that? Do you hear me better?
Still hearing the echo.
Let me see. I might have some headphones right over here.
Great.
Great. So, Giuseppe, did you catch this interview with Tony Bobulinski?
Yes.
On Tucker?
Wow. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see if Patrick saw that. Yeah, it's so devastating. But, you know, that's how the swamp operates, the deep swamp.
Yeah, it makes, you know, Watergate look like, you know, sort of a child's play and a walk in the park, man. Like, this is international crime syndicate, man.
Patrick, how are you doing now?
Well, I've got the headphones on, but I'm still hearing a bit of an echo, and I've got my mains turned down entirely.
Huh.
I don't know what's doing that.
Yeah. Let me, because I'm wearing headphones and my monitors are off.
Yeah, I've got earbuds. Yeah.
I don't know what this is about.
What is this about?
What do you, cause I muted you on StreamYard. So we should only be hearing the, the Skype feed. There shouldn't be that. That is odd, especially you've got your mains down. We're all wearing headphones.
Yeah, oh, they're saying in the chat room that they don't hear the echo anymore here. So,
oh, okay, that's good.
I'm getting from the chat that they're not hearing an echo.
Yeah, it's way better now.
It's way better.
Yeah.
Let's see. How about this? Is this better?
Okay. It's there just ever so slightly, but it's far less pronounced than it was.
Yeah, and at least people in the chat room are saying it's good. That's the important thing.
Yeah, there you go. So, Patrick, when you went and got the headphones, Dave just brought up the Blockbuster interview with Tony Bobulinski on Tucker. Did you watch that?
I've heard bits of it.
Pretty it's astounding the sewer rats that are in government and in the national stage and on the globalist stage these days. I mean, they impeached Nixon for nothing compared to what is standard operating procedure these days.
Oh, heavens, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like that Bobulinski guy was describing the activities of an international crime syndicate. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, so Patrick, so you started off in 2013 here on Revolution Radio. And so how did you, you know, end up getting your own show and that kind of thing? How did that progress?
Well, around 2014 or so, I was asked to be a moderator. And I was a moderator for a couple of years. And then I went into management about 2016. And that's when I started with a show of my own also. It was almost accidental from the get-go, but it advanced into something positive and set.
Right, right. And like, how would you describe, like, for those who may not be familiar with it, like, what time is your show, and how would you just describe it? You know, like, what would be the overall theme of it?
Well, it's on Thursday at noon on Studio A, noon Eastern. And I cover current events, and I also deal with metaphysical subjects, and I give an astrological commentary every week for the show. And whatever comes to mind. I cover music too, recording, and just general information about it.
Yeah, right on. Okay, well, I've got to throw over one more question, then hand the torch over to Giuseppe. Maybe you could talk about how did you get involved in astrology? The other day you told me that you'd been studying it for 50 years.
It's just something that I kind of gravitated to.
How did that start and where did it take you?
I gravitated to it back around 19, even when I was in high school. I was asking people, when's your birthday? I wanted to know what sign they were. So that's over 55 years or 50 years, whatever. And around 1969, 1970, I got into it a little bit more. I was in New York City. I had my chart done. It was like 1971 or something. I don't know. And that really started me. I had contact with a real astrologer, I think I would call him. And just ever since then, I've done it. And when I lived in Austin back from 87 to 91, I was doing it professionally. I was making money doing charts. And they call me the redneck astrologer.
Well, Patrick, I'm curious with your lifetime as a seeker of esoteric knowledge, I'm the same. And how do you envision astrology fitting into the esoteric path? Like, where did astrology really come from, in your opinion? And how is it so shockingly accurate compared to the mundane beliefs of modern society that, oh, it's just hokum? But as anyone who is actually a wisdom seeker knows, astrology is the real deal. And it's astounding that it even exists and it is so accurate. How does astrology fit into the esoteric world?
It's, I guess all I can say is it's part of it. It's a very ancient science. It's been with us since time out of mind. And I think it's a fact also that we do not know astrology near as well as they did in ancient times, whether it be ancient Egypt or India or going back all the way to Atlantis. And it's something that if I think you need to be a certain mindset, but if you just kind of live it and do your own chart and see how things affect you, even if it goes beyond the ability to explain it, you still feel it. You still see what is happening according to up there in the sky. With the certain planets and their different meanings, well, yeah.
Yeah, what's really something is the ancient art science of astrology. They knew about planets that the terrestrials of the time couldn't possibly know existed, which is really, they didn't have powerful telescopes, yet somehow it was, the knowledge was given to them. How do you, what's your thoughts on that?
Apparently they did have powerful telescopes.
Oh,
there are
okay.
records wherein it was said these, whatever you want to call them, sages could bring the planets close to them.
Ah, interesting.
Oh, wow.
I think they had technology far more than we know or are willing to admit, and they were good at it. They knew what they were doing.
Well, that's true, because, you know, the ancient Indian texts talk of, you know, the Vamanas and all kinds of, you know, weapons that were incredibly powerful as well. So I guess it's not too far beyond belief that they had incredible telescopes, too.
Right.
So you think that astrology would go back all the way to Atlantis?
Oh, easily. It's something that's always been with man. What's up there?
Right.
Something else that's been with man a long time is the entire grid of pyramids on this planet. What are your thoughts on what was the actual purpose of the pyramids many millennia ago?
It seems to me from the best writings and ideas I can get on it is that they were like power stations, whether it was literally physical power, which could well have been, or also a collection point for more spiritually oriented goodness.
Yeah, and all indications are that the pyramids and the Sphinx are much, much older than we've been told. What's your sense on how far back those might date, or who actually built them?
The ancient wisdom says that the Great Pyramid is about 80,000 years old.
Wow. And so the Sphinx is probably comparable, I would think, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Are either one of you two fellows familiar with the gentleman in Yugoslavia who excavated this giant pyramid that's pretty much buried? And he will actually take you on tours, and there's amazing healing properties involved once you go down into it. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. I have a couple of books on it.
Oh, that. What can you share about that, Pat?
I need to read them. I got them like in 2013, 2014. I kind of glanced at them and then put them up on the shelf. But I have them.
He said he had them. He just didn't say he read them.
He's intuiting it.
Right. No, they're just all over the place. They're in China. You know, at least as in Egypt, the Great Pyramid was a temple of initiation also.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And what according to what you've read, who actually built the pyramids?
Oh, that's a good question. Men, I think. I'm not one of these who believes in, you know, it was aliens who built it or anything like that. I think we did.
Humans, yeah.
Yeah.
Or perhaps giants, some race of giants. That's one thing I've wondered about, if some of these megalithic structures weren't built by a race of humans that were just simply much larger than current day humans. I don't know.
Well, I refer to the ancient teachings a lot, but it is said therein that the Atlanteans were pretty gigantic in stature, a lot of them up to 20 feet, you know, and then they started shrinking down to 12 feet as millennia passed.
Wow, because, you know, I've been doing some research on giants and trying to find some, primary source references to them, right? And apparently a lot of the Roman records talk about excavating the bones of giants. I was just reading the other day where there is a record from a Roman historian that they were tearing down a wall outside the city of Rome, and there was a giant skeleton that was over 100 feet tall.
Oh, dear. That's a lot bigger than you sure wasn't a statue.
No, this says that they excavated bones, and that they actually had them in the Roman version of a museum. One of the emperors brought them there. I don't have all the details in front of me, but it was very specific. They were bones.
It's interesting that the original intent by Smithsonian, the actual investigator Smithsonian, was to find such crypto history items like the giant bones and store them and investigate them. And when he died, it became like an X-File episodes where the X-Files of the government took it over, and anytime the Smithsonian is alerted, they grab it and hide the evidence. Are you familiar with how that shifted?
Oh, yes. That's endemic. That's all they do.
Yeah, that's so criminal. I mean, it seems to me there's an actual ongoing effort to deceive the human race and believe this fictional narrative. They suppress the great finds of archaeology by people like Dr. Michael Cremo. They have us believe this nonsense of allopathic Rockefeller medicine. They have us believe literally fictional accounts of history that are written to benefit certain weaponized minorities. And it's just amazing that the great masses of the normies lap it up like water at an oasis in the desert. It's so sad. There doesn't appear to be much critical thinking anymore.
Yeah, and they tend to believe what they read, and that could be affected and deliberately.
Or what they see on the mind control television, wouldn't you think?
Mm-hmm. All these shows.
Yeah, it's amazing the effort they've gone through to make sure that, you know, the average human has no idea what the history of the human race is. I think that it was the guy that wrote Fingerprint of the Gods, Graham Hancock, he said that the human race is a race that suffers from amnesia because we don't really know our true origins or the real history of Earth. And, you know, the Smithsonian Institute has sort of been like this giant vacuum cleaner, you know, sucking up all the evidence and putting them in some warehouse like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
That sure happened in this country. You know, with all the giants they have found, the 12-foot red-haired, six-fingered giants, and they disappear very quickly.
Let me ask you something. I'm sure you're familiar with the excavation that happened in the Grand Canyon that seemed to have Egyptian artifacts.
Yeah, it sure looked Egyptian, unless it's pre-Egyptian, and what we see in Egypt comes from the same place.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's a good point. But, and I was doing some research on this, and at one point, the Smithsonian had 17 archaeologists working on that site, and it was closed off to the public immediately as soon as they started working it.
Let me ask you something. I have my mic on in Skype. Should I turn that off?
No, you need that for the station.
Yeah, okay. You have to have that on.
Okay, because I'm still getting this crazy echo in my headphones.
Really? Because we're not hearing it at all now.
Yeah, I'm getting it. I'm not knowing what to do to get rid of it.
So what do you have? I can see your microphone's muted in Streamlab. So you should. Do you have something else on in addition to Skype?
Let me take a look. I don't think I have a mic on in Reason. It's possible.
You don't have the station on, do you?
Oh, yeah. Do you have the station on?
Oh, no. No. I don't have the station on, the player. That is weird. Yeah, they're both off.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not hearing an echo anymore.
Yeah, it's totally good for us now.
Well, so. I'm glad. I'm glad it is. I'm the only one suffering.
Well, it's got to be something. What I would suggest is just turn literally close every other program except for Skype and a StreamYard, and
let's see.
That should eliminate it. It's got to be somewhere on your system.
Yeah, you think so? Let me close this file, then I'll close Reason. Generally, it never affects me, but just. Okay. Reason should be quitting in a second. And it's still here. Now, let's see. I can close Firefox. And no, wait. If I do that,
no, you can't
I have
do that.
StreamYard on Firefox.
Yeah, you'll lose it. Yeah.
Are you a Windows-based system or Mac?
No, I'm Mac.
Oh, okay, because sometimes in Windows, they have that various sound source thing you can call up, but I'm not a Mac guy. I'm a Windows guy.
Yeah, well, but I followed the instructions to turn the mic on in SoundYard. Did I do bad there?
Oh, I muted it. Are you?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So
it's enabled somewhere along the line because I said go ahead.
Oh no, that's fine. That just means you can unmute it and use it like during the break. We turn down the Rev Radio Studio A feed and we just talk on StreamYard while the commercials are real low underneath. So that's when you'd unmute it. So, yeah.
Well,
but
you guys are not echoing. It's just me in my head.
Yeah. So it's got to be
it's all in your
somehow
mind.
Something's running that it is, what do you call it? An audio feed, right? It's, do you have like a auxiliary set of monitors somewhere?
No.
Or a program, an editing program or anything open?
No.
No.
No, I have a pretty simple setup. And then I've got everything. I got my mains off. And so there's nothing going on.
But
that's okay. As long as you're not hearing it, I can deal with it. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't being heard by everybody else beside myself.
Oh, in the chat room, and want to thank everybody for joining us today. Comet asks, Patrick, have you read anywhere that Thoth was the one who built the pyramids? I watched something last week.
I probably read something to that effect, but there's a lot said about Thoth and Hermes, Tehuti.
Yeah.
What have you?
Right.
But yeah, I'll hand y'all this question. Site. It's my favorite site on the net, and you can peruse it at your leisure. Oh, in fact, I read articles from it on my show.
Oh, are you going to post it in the chat room or something?
I have. No, I was going to put it in your Skype.
Oh, in Skype. Okay.
Your own.
Oh, so what is the site, Pat?
It's occult-mysteries.org.
Ah, I love stuff like that. There's some pretty cool,
very good
YouTube channels that were banned for a while, and they fought for the right to come back. And there's some, you know, the suppressed crypto history is just fascinating. You know, it's funny, like the what the heck is that called? It ends with Tepes. Göbekli Tepe.
Oh, Göbekli Tepe.
What's amazing about that is, had that German archaeologist not hidden it from the controllers and literally worked for like a decade in secret, it would have been suppressed. And it's interesting that there's an even older one called that they flooded. It had so much revealing information, and I have read where there's a site in the Grand Canyon that was flooded for similar reasons. Are you aware of that at all?
Not myself, no, but fie on them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
bad.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I was reading about Göbekli Tepe. Apparently it was first discovered 20 years before the German guy. Was actually a little more even. In the late 1960s, there was a German archaeologist there who came across some artifacts at that site, but didn't really think much of it because he was so married to the sort of the traditional, story about things. And it was the discoverer who was reading through these documents left by the previous archaeologist that led him to come to that spot and start checking it out again.
Oh, really? That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's very fascinating.
Yeah.
So, Patrick, tell us about your how long you've been involved in music. You're a very advanced guitar player, and you're a big fan of a certain type of progressive shredding, which is playing super fast. And tell us about all that and how you got into that.
Well, I've been with music ever since I was about 8 years old when I started piano. And I started cornet at 11 and guitar at 13. And I've just always been into playing. And initially I was a rock and roller, always have been. And that's kind of what I am now. And I got into recording around 2000, 2001. And I just eat this stuff up when it comes to learning how to record and then just playing. But you know, to be honest, I'm more into lyrical playing than I am into virtuoso playing.
Oh, like melodic, lyrical, like...
Yeah, I wanted to have more content there than showing off. You know, like one YouTuber, The Guitologist, is a very good channel too. He says, Fretboard Olympics. That's right, about the size of it. And where does that go? What's all that about? Look how good
I am.
And
you know, what always impresses me in music or guitar playing is when it can evoke an emotion, a deep emotion from the listener. That's when you know you've got something really special.
Right. Absolutely. And so it's all about sound to me. I'm trying to sculpt and shape sound.
That's very cool. So what do you... do you put any of your recordings up for people to hear?
Not yet. I've been doing a lot of work, but I need to get them to MP3s and then up. But the fact is that they're not really finished products. I'm working on beds, you know, without vocals and many of them
tracks,
without guitar. I'm just putting down riffs and a bass and drums. And sure, I could record that and put it up, but if someone thought that that were a finished product, that would be a mistake. It's not necessarily the case.
Uh-huh.
But that's not enough to stop me from doing it. Yeah.
Well, Patrick, what would be your primary influences musically? Because I can't help but notice a definite Jerry Garcia, influence in some of your playing, that sort of frolicking and happy, just frolicking sound that Jerry was so masterful at. Who would you say some of your biggest influences are?
Jerry was one, and Eric Clapton, and then Page. And any number, it's hard to center in on just one, but it's funny because I've been getting into learning about a lot of metal, but I don't like a lot of it. Some of it I do. I like the riffage and everything, but I like the older proto metal of the 80s. And when I do think, go ahead.
No, like who?
Oh, let's see. Judas Priest. And who's the other one? Iron Maiden. They were kind of the ones that started it, along with Black Sabbath. But I've never been a big fan of Black Sabbath. They're good. I'm just not my deal so much. But when I do things, and I'm even trying to make it sound metally, it comes out rock. So I'm an old rocker. That's all there is to it. Pardon me. Now that's kind of, I spend a lot of my time doing that, and I am in dropped tuning. You know what drop D is, right?
Of course, yeah.
When you take your low E string and tune it to a D. Well,
I love that.
I'm down one whole step below that. I'm in drop C.
So the other five strings are standard tuning, and then you're in drop C.
No. The other five strings went down a whole step too. It's the same as drop D, and you take the whole show down one step.
Oh, so, well, you're actually down then two steps, right?
The low E string is, but the other
and all the other strings are down. Okay, right. So the five strings from one through five are down a whole step, and then the sixth string, the low E, is down two steps.
Correct.
Oh, because what I do is I tune everything down one whole step. I really like that.
Yeah, that's D standard.
That's D standard. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what that's called. And that's cool, too. That's used a lot. Then there's C standard. You can go lower than that. But drop C is the meat and potatoes tuning for a lot of heavy rock we've heard for a long time.
Oh. Interesting.
I'm going to have to try that. I've actually never done – I've done the drop D a lot. I love that sound, but I've never done drop C. I'm going to have to try that. That's cool.
Yeah, just take drop D down, everything down one whole step more.
So, Patrick, Scorpio and I often lament when we're just having our discussions not on air that we both were in pretty successful bands back in the day and missed that camaraderie. Were you ever in a band where it really felt like a band of brothers?
Well, I was in a band in the 70s, and we were doing the South Louisiana circuit, playing a lot of clubs and stuff, and along with two other bands. But it got to where things were annoying me to such a degree about the whole thing that it kind of went in the opposite direction from camaraderie. And so I just up and quit. I regret it sometimes because I don't think I ever attained that to the degree that I would like to have. But so it is because I never stopped playing. And now I have so much energy into recording. And you are the whole band yourself. You don't have to deal with anybody, which is good.
Yeah, I mean that's where I'm at. I do miss because I'm my strengths are lyrics and singing, and I've become a decent guitar player now. But in the heyday with my band in the 90s, the other guitar players were far better than I was, My goal is to be in a band where I'm the worst player, but I'm the most creative, so I bring all the songs and they make them better. And it was like that for a while, and in fact that caused me to learn how to become very good at the Ebo. Have you ever used an Ebo?
No, I have not, but I know what it is.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. In fact, all of the And, you know, there was, to me, I put so much time into carrying those guys and doing all the marketing and PR and getting the album made. And it was such a betrayal when they kind of turned on me, because they felt like, you know, as you get bigger, people naturally want to talk to the singer and the songwriter. And they were like, you know, these jealousy issues arose in their minds. And to me, the height of insanity was they left the band disbanded, and then they put together another one and they played my songs. They didn't do well without me, but it's kind of funny.
That kind of stuff is almost guaranteed to go on.
Yeah, it
always does.
That's what happened to Roger Waters.
The ability to rise above it, which is so important. What I've always done in bands is I've been the one who's known most of the music, and I was always the lead guitarist. And so I would take it from there, and I would get songs together and explain them and everything. And we had some good players. And so that's how it was.
So you were more like the musical director of the band.
Yes, you could say that. I've studied music all my life, and I know music pretty well.
Oh, that's cool.
I picked up fiddle in 1991, 92.
Oh, nice.
And so then I was even in an orchestra, in a university orchestra for a while, and I played fiddle with this group from Lafayette all through the 90s, pretty much, and went to France twice. So I did a lot better with the fiddle than I've ever done with the guitar. And I don't think I'm all that great a fiddler, but I made it work.
That's very cool. So are you a trained sight reader and all? You can read music? Oh, okay, that's great.
Yeah, when I can see it, I can't see it so well anymore.
Oh, okay.
The notes are too small now. I need big notes.
Well, it's interesting, Giuseppe, what you said about your experiences with the band, because that's kind of very similar to my experience in terms of like my big focus was singing and writing songs. And then, you know, when you get together with guys like a lead guitar player that's just blows you away, you end up pushing each other to higher realms as you're playing a live show. And, it really is better than sex. And I don't mean that in any kind of a weird way. Like when you're really hooked into the groove, man, it's like pure magic. And you can just take each other to a higher place
from your different skill sets.
But then conversely, like Patrick was saying, when things go bad, they can go really bad, and you can it's like a marriage going bad or something like that. You know, you're very closely hooked up with those guys, and when things go south, it can get difficult to deal with.
The thrill is gone.
Yeah, it's interesting. In addition to being wired in with the great music, like when right before we broke up, we were pretty popular, and we would sell out 300 to 500 seat places, and people were there wearing our t-shirts and singing along with the lyrics and giving so much positive energy. So you had the euphoria of playing these songs live, and the band got so tight after 5 years. And then the additional positive energetic input from the waves of enjoyment of the fans, and you combine those two things, and it was better than sex.
You get really high.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
an amazing feeling that I have never really reproduced any.
Yeah. Same
else.
Here.
Yeah.
What's funny
too,
is
man.
The first time we went up and played New York, it went so well that we were so jacked up. We're like, well, we're not going to sleep anyway. Let's just drive home. So we just drove home 6 hours overnight. Cause it's amazing that, and I can see why. And that was just, you know, to 300 to 500 people. Imagine what these people, these artists, when they're playing to 10,000 to 50,000 in a stadium, no wonder they turn to drugs and crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, you can see that.
Yeah, because with each big high, there's a big low, you know.
Being in D.C., Giuseppe, that's where Periphery is from. And also Animals as Leaders.
Right, yeah. Right. That's that fella, Tubin or whatever his name is?
Yeah, Abbasi.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Oh yeah, I've seen him live a couple times. One of the coolest things is about, I don't know, 3 years ago, Steve Vai and Evgeny Malmsteen and Tubin and a couple other people, they went out as a five great guitarist tour. Mm-hmm. And it was something, the Masters of Acts or something, I forget, Steve Vai had put it together. And what was funny is, you guys may have experienced this, but in my band, we had one of the guitarists, he liked to get a little buzz, and when he got buzzed up, he would turn his amp up. You know, we kept telling him, don't turn the amp up, let the sound man take care of it. And yet, inevitably, because a lot of those deals back in the day were, you get paid like $500 for the show and free booze, right? Free beer.
Yeah. Free drinks.
He would inevitably do it. So we'd all keep turning up because I didn't want to listen to his guitar. I wanted to hear mine. And where I'm going with this is, at that show, here's five professionals with a pro sound man, and everyone kept, especially Malmsteen, when they'd come on together and play, he would always turn his up louder than the others. So by the end of the night, had to walk out because I didn't have, even with earbuds, it was so loud. It was just like insane. And I'm like, these guys are professionals and they're doing the same thing. It's too funny.
Sound Wars. Yeah, it's Tosin Abasi.
Oh, Tosin. There you go. Yeah,
Tosin. Tosin.
Yeah, to me, that his stuff is just so, advanced. It's almost, it's not like listening to music that I enjoy. It's like I have to like listen to it. Like, what the heck is he doing? That tuning and the extra strings. It's just different than it doesn't bring me enjoyment to listen to what he's doing because it's so alien to what I like, but I do admire his
it brings me wonder.
Exactly.
I watch him and I see what he's doing, my ears are taking it apart, but he's just got a talent that's beyond. His parents are from Nigeria, interestingly enough, but has his own line of 8-string guitars and they're very nice. They have the fan fret system where the frets are fanned out on the bass side because you have a longer scale for the bass strings.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, that's really something. Yeah, he definitely is a generational talent, that's for sure. I mean, he's so beyond what most people even know and listen to, but he seems to be finding a following, right?
Oh, he's established his place in musical history. No doubt.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's bunches of really good guitarists.
Were you a big Beatles fan, Patrick?
They lost me about Revolver.
Oh, really?
I used to listen to them, but no, I was never a big Beatle-holic or anything.
What was it about Revolver that sort of turned you off?
Well, the music started getting a little too odd. I don't know who was doing the writing. It was credited to Lennon and McCartney, but I'm not so sure that it didn't have other input. And it just started getting really into it. It wasn't rock and roll anymore.
Right. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, it wasn't.
And so, I just kind of went my own way. And by that time, I was getting into Zeppelin.
Early Zeppelin, yeah, that
oh,
was.
Oh yeah, I was a senior in high school in 1969, and that first album came out.
Yeah, that was a mind blower, and it's amazing how Zeppelin's music just progressed and changed with each album. The first two were definitely hard rock, but then it just kept progressing and changing and getting more complex.
To me, it progressed in a good way. Yeah, and a lot of there was a direction it took with Robert Plant, I guess, perhaps Page too. But later on, Nighthawk and his stuff, he was really into Zeppelin, you could tell. And actually, his better stuff was dubbed Moroccan Roll, with some of their songs, Kashmir, and, mm-hmm. and that Eastern sound that they were feeding into it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, see, you know, by the time I discovered Zeppelin, it was like that. I was in high school, early high school. So I bought all the albums and listened to them one after another all at once, you know. And I just remember the first two were like such mind-blowing heavy metal. Then at first I was disappointed because it kept changing. But looking back on it, the albums actually got better in a lot of ways. And even In Through the Outdoor was some of the songs on that album were just so unique and different, you know, just amazing.
Oh, indeed. I have an entire collection on CD. I made a point of buying that.
Not the entire Led Zeppelin catalog?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's interesting that back then, on mainstream radio, you would hear such an array of awesome music. You'd hear Led Zeppelin, and then you could hear King Crimson, and then you'd hear Southern Rock. And that was all on the so-called FM radio stations of the day. And today, I find commercial radio playing modern music unlistenable. And,
oh, absolutely.
But there's a ton of great, great independent artists. I think that's one of the beauties of all the various. But it's tough to find them. You know, I mean, because there are some DJs on the various Spotify like platforms, but
iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Yeah, and those are the gatekeepers now.
Right, right, right. But if you peruse like Bandcamp, where the artists are putting up their own stuff, there's some amazing stuff.
CD
there.
Baby and Bandcamp.
Right, right. Yeah.
Probably Bandcamp is better.
I don't know if you've ever been a fan of country music, but I found what Giuseppe's describing on, you know, rock and roll radio, even more so with country music. It's not even country music anymore. It's just terrible.
It's like bad rock. Yeah. Yeah.
It's some form of pop. The thing is, once Pro Tools came along and everybody started getting into the box, all of a sudden you had the ability, whether it was intended or not, to take the humanity out of the music. You could pocket it, now get it right to the grid, you know, so every drum beat hit exactly on the line. And then you'd take the vocals and you'd pitch them, you know, it's auto-tune. And every note is perfect. And all of a sudden, it's not fun anymore. It's not the real thing.
It's sanitized.
Absolutely.
You know what's interesting to me in autotune is you have these gigantically popular, talentless rappers who even with autotune, they're off key to the music they're rapping. I mean, they don't
That's hard to do.
That is hard to do.
It takes talent.
So getting to the point of both Wisdom and Conspiracy are two. What are your thoughts, Patrick and Scorpio, on the idea that this whole sanitization of music and the, the degeneration of real creativity and spirit to this nasty, ugly, misogynistic, violent rap music and the propped up commercial artists like Katy Perry with all their Illuminati symbols in every video. And what are your thoughts on what is music being used for these days?
An agenda. It's to hit the people, get to them. It's really sad. And I don't give it a lot of thought. You know, I'm too busy doing other things, but I'm aware of it.
Oh, there you go. Good for you. Yeah,
but I don't have a lot to say on it. But you're right.
Well, to me, it just seems like it's obviously just a deliberate attempt to stifle creativity and art. And because I think if you look at the reasons why they're doing that, it shows you how powerful art and creativity really is and how it could really be used to transform humanity and our society and our culture.
And they can't have that.
No.
No. What are your thoughts on that, Giuseppe?
I think that dating back to the whole Frankfurt School and then later entities like the Tavistock Institute and the CIA's work, that they actively have taken over the what's going on in the mass dissemination of music. And I think there's a darker agenda and use at play. I mean, even early hip hop and rap was about in trying to inspire the underclass from the cities to take control of your lives and make something yourself. And now it's been taken and the message is be a gangbanger, man, beat that bitch, you know, here's my nine, you know, and all this use drugs. And it's just such a satanic message now. And similarly satanic in the Katy Perry videos and the Madonna videos and all these other it's right there, but the average normie doesn't know what he or she is looking at. And it's astounding to me that the parents allow their children to embrace this. It's just it's entrainment. It's mind control entrainment.
Well, we're reaping the fruit of 25 years of Common Core.
These people
have grown up now, and so you see what they made, the monsters they've made.
Common Core and gaming, man. What a dark 1-2 punch to the decency of the family, the decency of society. Yeah, man. This is really it. So-called conservative movement or the real Christian movement, not the Zionist Christian movement. That's like saying, a Zionist Christian is an oxymoron. It's like saying devil God. I mean, it's so.
Right.
And yet there's like that vulgar little tub of goo, like John Hagee, you know, he's like the main leader of the evangelical Zionist Christian movement. And that guy is, I don't know.
He's delivered me. Well. Have you ever seen a picture of his mansion?
Yeah. It pays well. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you were talking earlier about the rap music, and you know, just this morning I was thinking about how incredible some of that Motown era music was.
Oh my God!
And it's like, who made the decision that kind of music was just out, no more, and now we're going to have rap music? I mean, how exactly did that happen?
Some people way up there with the money and the power.
Yeah.
What you do is you buy everybody out, and then do what you will.
Yeah, I mean, the way I understand it is it was an organic movement in like the Oakland ghetto and the New York ghetto, and some of these Zionist types, these parasites who got to the top of the music industry off of the great talents of artists, realized what could be done with that. And then I think once they threw some money at it, then they introduced they steered it in the direction they wanted, which is, you know, ultimately the Zionist globalists want the destruction of stable Christian society. And they were able to take a somewhat inspiring message of early hip hop and rap and turn it into yet another axe in the back of stable Christian society. And so it's been very effective. I mean, you look at what these young white people in the suburbs, they wear their pants down at their below their butt, just like the gangbangers do. And what's so hilarious to me is they're all so ignorant that they don't understand in prison the weak inmates do that to show the strong alpha types that they're open for business in exchange for protection. And so they don't even understand what it's just bizarre to me. It's just clown world.
Yep, that's what's going on.
Yeah, and it's very deliberate, no question. But you know, who are the next generation after the Motown music? I mean, it seems like somehow that's just that didn't progress to the next step. It just was replaced somehow.
Was there one?
I don't know. I mean, not that I know of.
Okay, things are kind of quiet while they were metamorphosing.
Well, it became more demographically separated. There's always been like the it became back like before the golden age of music was the 60s, 70s, 80s, where, you know, Motown was played on a rock station. It was just great music, right? And then all of a sudden it became very demographically isolated. There was still soul music and R&B and urban contemporary, but it was no longer played to the white crowd. It was more focused on the black. So there were people like Anita Baker and Donnie Hathaway and Luther Vandross who were doing some really great music, but it was no longer being exposed to the masses.
That's a good explanation, actually. Yeah, I think that's about right.
I'm watching a really good series of YouTubes by this producer engineer in LA. His name is Warren Hewitt. He's from England. And he has this studio tours segment, just dozens and dozens of episodes. And he goes around to all these very highfalutin engineer producers who are his peers, and he interviews them. And you get studio tours, but also there's a lot of talking. And you pick up little snippets here and there about what may have happened, or, you know, at least what happened from their point of view.
Oh, that's cool. I love watching when people in a certain industry do shop talk. And yeah, I love that. That's so interesting. And it can go in such, you know, interesting life lesson directions you don't expect to see. Yeah, those are the best kind of YouTube shows, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. As long as there's lots of them, there's a lot of time for me to lie in bed at night and watch my iPad.
There you go.
It's my new TV.
Yeah. Well, we're almost at the top of the hour. I just want to remind everyone listening to please try to help out Revolution Radio. We are 100% listener funded. So come on, freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. And become a Patreon member, and or just help out any way you can, because, you know, this bastion of free speech is more important than ever. And, you know, as we all know, free speech is under attack more so than it ever has been, at least in our lifetimes. Okay, there we go. Everyone stay tuned for hour number two of the Wisdom Circle. We'll be right back.
I think I've got it, Giuseppe. I think I've got it now. All I had to do was mute my own mic. Now, that shouldn't have mattered because I have headphones on. But however, it stopped the echo.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
And we're not echoing now.
This is the people's war.
Just proceed to do this.
It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning!
Whatever you like.
They're going to kill us all!
I don't have anything.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious, makes you so sick at heart. You can't even passively take part.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Right! You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
I'm trying to see what Connor is saying. He can hear us over the bumper.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There is blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, we're back with hour number two on the Wisdom Circle. I'm here with Giuseppe and Patrick Rabbit. We've been talking esoteric stuff and some music too. And so, Patrick, what are you currently studying in terms of, is there anything that you've been reading in terms of esoteric information that's really kind of blown your mind or had you thinking and philosophizing?
Yeah, I don't know. I study this and that, or I read this and that, but it's stuff that I'm used to studying. I'm a big fan of Blavatsky, and I don't think she was the fake that she is accused of being. And you see a lot of this running around. There's a bit of a miasma here in alternative circles. And you'll hear a lot of criticisms, and they're just repeating what they've read, I think, more than having given it a whole lot of thought. Nothing in particular.
Tell us, like, what parts of Blavatsky's work were influential, or that you thought were, you know, profound?
Well, it's what she did. Essentially, she brought together all the disparate parts of the ancient wisdom and put it out as one thing. And first, the Isis Unveiled, which I have read cover to cover, and the Secret Doctrine is her magnum opus. And it's so big, it's not a cover to cover read so much. It is something you can open anywhere. and read with profit. And that entire thing was based upon something known as the Stanzas of Dzyan, D-Z-Y-A-N. And these were some stanzas that were found written in the ancient Sinzar language. That's S-E-N-Z-A-R. And it was kind of coeval with the most ancient Sanskrit that we're aware of. And what those verses say is what the entire volume of The Secret Doctrine was based on. And it was not just her. There were two other individuals involved who stayed hidden behind the scenes. We don't know who they are today, but and they just wanted it that way. But they were very, very wise people. And it's you see a whole lot of, after she died, a lot of her so-called followers became detractors. And there was only one or two persons who really remained truly faithful to her. And these people just took the ball and ran with it, and they just ran off the field. And you get people like Alice Bailey, and then you get Rudolf Steiner, who actually didn't say bad things, but he doesn't ever say anything that Blavatsky didn't say better. And so there's nothing new after her, quite honestly. And it's just something that you have to read yourself and make your own, come to your own conclusions.
What are your thoughts on Manly P. Hall's work?
He was pretty good, I think. Now, yeah. I have his big book, The Secret Teachings of the Ages.
Yeah, I've got the folio, the elephant folio version of that. And it's so cool with the giant pictures and everything in it, man.
Don't know that I've heard of that.
Oh, yeah. When the book was first published, you know, Manly P. Hall was only 27 years old when that book was first published. It's hard
How
to
old?
Believe. 27 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. And anyway, there's a version of the book that's maybe 2 feet long by maybe a foot across. And they call that an elephant folio. And that was the original format of the book when it was published in the 1930s. Or I think it was 1930s, yeah. And so there were several different versions of it printed later that are more accessible. But it's kind of cool having a book that big, because you pick it up and it's like you feel like you're holding something important. And then all the big illustrations in it and everything. It's an incredible book. And his lifetime really spanned, 50 years of research and esoteric writing.
Yeah, I think it's good. There are a couple of other writers worthy of note. One was earlier than Blavatsky. He was born in 1819, I think. And his name was E. V. Keneally. And he brought forth his version of the Book of Enoch and the Book of Adam, I think. And another one or two, the Book of Foe. And it's written rather in a rather arcane manner. There's nothing a whole lot out front, but it is there. And then there's also a writer known as J. Michaud, M-I-C-H-A-U-D, J. Michaud, Ph.D. And he wrote some wonderful books. And if you check out, I put that site in both of your Skypes. And if you go to occult-mysteries.org, you will run into all of this.
Right on.
So,
favorite site.
The Blavatsky called Sanskrit a tongue absent from the nomenclature of languages. So why do you believe it disappeared, Patrick?
I don't know that I ever gave it any thought. Now, I don't have enough to go on about why that might have happened.
Interesting.
I think it's ancient, and it's probably connected with Atlantis. Egypt was a colony of Atlantis, supposedly, for, you know at least 80,000 years, I'd say, because the Great Pyramid is that old.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's a whole bunch of colonies of Atlantis. And I was recently reading through Plato's stories about Solon and his voyage to Egypt and how he got the story of Atlantis.
The Timaeus and, you know, and the Critias.
Some people like to downplay and say, oh, it's just allegory. But if you read this story very carefully, it's clear that this is meant as history, and it's not some kind of allegory.
A lot of it is right out front. He's talking about the Atlantean aircraft that had movable wings, so they would fly more like birds would.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, that's all in both the Critias and the Timaeus.
Yes. Yeah, and one part that really struck me in Critias and Timaeus was Solon, when he first gets to Egypt, he's sort of bragging about the Greeks' great knowledge of history, and the priest replied to him, "You Greeks are but like children. You do not know the ancient history. You only think you do." I was like, wow.
That's right. And man, he also brought forth how the very most ancient Greeks of around 11,500 years ago, all by themselves pretty much, because they couldn't get any help, fought off the Atlantean invasion, which was not that long before the last of the islands went down.
Oh, that's interesting. How did they fight off such an advanced technological civilization?
I imagine they were of the same ilk.
Oh.
And had the wherewithal. We have like the Canaries and the Azores, and they are leftover peaks of some of the Atlantean smaller. I mean, because they were islands. It wasn't a continent. There were a number of fair-sized islands. And it is thought by many that Ireland is part of Atlantis. And I've been there. It's a very magical place.
Wow.
That's cool. Yeah, it's just criminal what's being done to Ireland and other small native cultures by the globalist parasites. I mean, it's just such an insidious plan, and just it's like dominoes. One by one, these beautiful cultures and these small countries are just being knocked over. And to change metaphors, it's like a cancer creeps in, the cancer of the globalist parasite, and before you know it, they place their Indian as in Hindu prime minister, and the corporations are there because it's low taxes, and it, all of a sudden it's sanitized. There's that word again, and homogenized into the transnational corporation outpost, and where it was once a beautiful, vibrant country with a unique culture. I mean, our friend Breiser, who has his own excellent podcast weekly from Ireland, he's one of the few people who's fighting against that publicly. And it's just, you know, it's just amazing what people will put up with for a few shekels.
It is indeed. And I think, though, that if you push the Irish far enough, they have the propinquity to stand up and say, no, enough of this. They've done a lot of that in the past.
I hope so.
And I think it'll happen again. We see it happening all over Europe, France and Italy, the riots and protesting the lockdowns and all this. So a lot of people are very unhappy.
And the Germans, too. Even they consider the Germans to be the most subjugated country in Europe. And what they had, that 2 million people marching just a couple months ago, and things are brewing there. It's you're right. Things are changing all over Europe. The winds of revolution are blowing.
Yeah, it's amazing how cowardly a great majority of Americans are, and how ignorant, how spiritually immature, how cowardly to just accept what these allopathic corporate Rockefeller pseudo priests of corporate medicine are telling them to do. I mean, these masks are just a joke. They're ineffective. They're slave training. The vaccines, it's just a lie. There's never been a safe vaccine. There's never been an effective vaccine. They're all just a scam. The arrogance of the colonizer, pretty much. And this time they're colonizing nature and thinking they know better than, and even the way they they don't understand viruses. Viruses, fungi, and bacteria are the fundamental building blocks of this planet. And to think that viruses are our enemy, it's just ridiculous. We have in every human being trillions of viruses functioning as part of the greater body, just like we have trillions of bacteria and we have fungi in us. It's just so stupidly arrogant. And I wish people would wake up, because it's going to be the downfall of this country.
I agree.
Maybe we could just go back to Atlantis for a minute. Because it's one of my favorite subjects, as a guilty pleasure. What do you think ended up happening? It's funny how there's so many ancient ruins that are under the ocean, like, you know, the Bimini Road and some of the places that are off the shore of Japan. And, you know, everyone always jumps to, oh, that must be where Atlantis was. Well, I think there's all kinds of ancient civilizations that existed, and that the ocean levels have changed dramatically depending on what time of history we're talking about. What do you think happened to Atlantis, and how do you see the diaspora of the survivors? You know, what do you think happened afterwards?
Well, Atlantis was a world culture, and it persisted for about a million years, and there was one big sinking. And it may not have been in the Atlantic, but there was a big sinking of this fourth root race culture, which was Atlantis, and that was about 800,000 years ago. And then there was another big sinking around 200,000 years ago. And then the last was about 11,500 years ago. And it was enough to take those islands right under the water. I think it was astronomical. It had to do with a huge meteor or comet or whatever. And I think the whole world was affected. It knocked much of the world back to the Stone Age till written history as we know it reared its head again about 5,000 years ago. And those who knew and those who were able to get away, they knew it was coming. They had forewarning, I believe, and they went to Europe. And they went to the Americas, and because the Mayan, the ancient Indian civilizations down on into South America, those were Atlantean too, and they were already there. But a lot of the survivors from the islands would have come across the water, I think. That's what I gather from what I read.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you mentioned several different cataclysms, because in that Critias by Plato, the priest tells Solon that there had been several cataclysms, not just one.
Did you say something, Dave? I'm sorry, I was messing with a knob here.
Oh, no, I was just saying it was interesting what you said about, you referenced that there were several cataclysms that happened, you know, around Atlantis, and that totally matches what Plato wrote in Critias. Because the priest told Solon that there had been several cataclysms, not just one.
Right. But he doesn't elaborate, does he?
No.
However, that's what you will read in the ancient wisdom, such as we have it, you know. And the secret doctrine is a good place to look. And there are other sources, I think, but you have to kind of... The secret doctrine is really the best place to go for everything that's just pulled together in one spot. And you do have to take a lot on faith, I guess, but if it feels right, it's probably true, which is dangerous to say, but... What else are you going to do?
Your echo's back, Patrick.
Oh, dear. I thought I could take these headphones off. Hang on.
Echo.
Okay, here we go. They start to hurt my ears. It gets painful.
The those rabbit ears.
How does the land of Lemuria fit into all this with Atlantis, in your opinion?
Lemuria was the time period before the million years or so that Atlantis occupied in human evolution. And it was the home of the third root race. And then America was tied into this in the middle of the two. And then Atlantis started coming forth about a million years ago. And that was the fourth root race. And we are now in the fifth root race. This is the teaching, I guess you could say, of the root races. And we'll be seven root races all told. Things go in cycles of seven.
Right, right.
Yeah. And we're looking forward into time. You know, I mean, the Kali Yuga just started 5,000 years ago. And it's the one age that is the, pardon my French, the shithole age. And it will last 432,000 years. So we've got 426,000 years left.
Okay, that's not too bad.
But it's like a sine wave. It goes up and down, and though inexorably lower, there are high points. So don't give up hope.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily going under to a bad end. And then, you know, this is just this life. And the idea is to make the most of this life, because there is more life after we finish this little episode here. Everybody's so scared of death. That's what the masks. What are you so scared of?
Well, that's right. No one gets out of here alive.
The intentional immaturity that especially Americans are kept at a emotional, spiritual, intellectual level of about a six-year-old. So their low impulse control can be easily viscerally separated into opposing sides and believe dogmatic teaching as gospel truth, when it really all the great works are allegory and they're supposed to teach you something and you're supposed to understand it. You're not supposed to act out like you're in a child's play. And it's funny to me, so many people are so shallow and weak-minded, they have to take a literal truth from an allegory. It's just, I feel bad for them. They're so limited.
They're so childlike. And I can only think that they are new to the incarnational cycles. They don't have a lot of lifetimes here behind them. I don't know. That just may be a general trend with them, but it's the only thing I can think, because they don't act normal.
You know, that's an excellent, excellent observation, that untold growth in human population the last, 100 years or so is just, yeah, the lot of newbies coming in, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it answers a lot of questions.
It does answer a lot, without a doubt. Yeah, it's funny. As I grow older, when I was younger, I used to have patience for people like that. And now I try to isolate myself from them as much as possible, because it's not worth having any discussions with them, because they will not, they cannot comprehend your knowledge or understanding or experience. They have to strain it through their own little meat grinder perception of reality and then make it into a little McDonald's burger that they can eat. And it's just, what's the point?
It's wearing. It really is.
It is wearing.
Yeah, and it's difficult to talk with people now that are, you know, true believers in this hysteria, you know, because they start off with this sort of self-righteous, you know, you don't think anyone's dying? Well, you know, I talked to a lady just the other day that said that to me. I was like, no, people die every day. People always die every day. So, yes, people are dying. And then I was like, well, do you know anyone personally that died of COVID? She goes, well, yes, my uncle's cousin's friend's mother's brother's third cousin had it.
Right.
And like, oh, and they died? And like, yeah. But how old was he? Well, 80 years old. That was her great proof right there. So what do you do?
Yeah, it's nutty. I have a young relative of mine who is totally bought into the Western scientific model, and her and her brother on Facebook were freaking out over COVID and blah, blah, blah. And I like laid out a couple paragraph explanation that, look, you know, vaccines are worthless. And she received an award. She works as a nurse for the first nurse at this large hospital in southeastern Wisconsin to get 1,000 little kids vaccinated. And I find that so personally offensive. I'm embarrassed to say that. So I lay out the fact that, look, you know, no vaccine is ever going to save you. You have to change your lifestyle and boost your immune function. If you have a healthy immune system and you're getting yourself lots of nutrition, you will never get sick from this, the coronavirus. It's just a mutated coronavirus, and the truly healthy will survive this. And she's like, she like loses her shit and like screams at me in the text, "That's not science." I'm like, "Oh my God, child, you have no clue." And oh well, some people have to learn the hard way. So,
and you see how fast they unwind, you know?
Right,
it's unbelievable. Exactly. Good God.
Yeah.
And I've known people who have actually come into my house. You know, people I've known in the past visiting for a day or few, and they had Trump derangement syndrome.
Oh my God.
And they were true believers, and it's amazing when you get to see it up close.
Yeah, I've actually seen people that were literally frothing at the mouth because they hated Trump so much. And it's like, it's one thing if, okay, you don't like him and whatever, but to get into this state where you're just literally this raging with hatred, it's just bizarre. And it shows the power of the media to manipulate people's minds that aren't aware of it's being done to them.
Common core.
Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I just said common core.
Yeah. I have this video clip I grabbed that I could play now, the audio on Skype and the video for us, but it's so annoying. I'll just describe it. This clever person put together six young Trump derangement syndrome feminists all losing their shit and screaming in various ways over the whole Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Amy Coney Barrett transition, and he has them all at the same time, and it's so annoying. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard, so I'm not going to play it, but it just shows how demented they are and how easily controlled. And, you know, when we're doing the new show, it's been a couple months now, Need to Know the Fetzer Report, and every day we point out the same thing, that there is no Democratic Party of the 60s, you know, which used to serve the workers in the lower middle class. That's all gone now. It's been changed and it usurped into this despicable globalist tool. And if you think that Donald Trump is your problem and you're championing a better path for the United States, you are out of your flipping minds. And it's just so sad that they can't possibly understand it. And I mean, Donald Trump is no saint. Donald Trump is a grifter. He's a alpha male bully boy who's figured out his whole life that if he tells people, I can fix this, but if you don't do it my way, that's how he got the non-taxable support from New York City, when New York could have desperately used all that money. But, you know, ultimately he was right when he – because a lot of big money followed him in and really saved New York, which was just an absolute cesspool in the 70s. And up until now, de Blasio is destroying it. But the whole Trump method, sometimes it does work that way. And so he's compromised all his bankruptcies, all his dirty dealings. That's why he doesn't want his taxes to be released, because it'll show that he's more of a grifter and a paper, you know, he owns things, but ultimately he's not, you know, a true billionaire in the sense of he could whip out the cash if he wanted to. And there's nothing wrong with that. But to make him Lucifer in this whole deal and not see who the real evil is just so ridiculous and so weak-minded.
Yep. Well said.
But getting back,
and it's funny how the entire political establishment is lined up against him. So there, he must be doing something right. This is the way I look at it, because I've never seen this kind of hatred, sort of put out towards to the public towards one individual. It's amazing. And I was watching he was actually mocking this COVID thing on one of his speeches. I saw a clip of him. He's like, COVID, 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 COVID. That's all you hear is COVID. And I was like, thank God someone finally said that, man. You know?
Well, it's so ridiculous. Where I was born and raised in Wisconsin, they're like the newspaper there, which is now used to be owned by the Milwaukee Journal and Sentinel, used to be owned by the workers, literally by the journalists, by the pressmen, by the everybody who worked there. It was awesome. And now it's owned by Gannett or whoever bought Gannett. Now I don't even pay attention anymore. But when I was a journalist there, it was literally owned by the workers. It was so cool. And anyway, now they're just, oh my God, there's such a COVID outbreak. Oh my God, we're ground zero. And 50 people died and you know, in a state of 8 million. And there's 250 hospitalized. And it's like, well, why don't you step back and be a real journalist for a second? Why don't you step back and say, why were we wearing these stupid masks when the actual SARS-CoV-2 mild pandemic ended in the summer? And why don't you look at the fact that these masks are creating bacterial pneumonia and creating blah, blah, blah? And why don't you cover the fact that there is no test for SARS-CoV-2? There is no accurate test yet. All they do is they point out you have some derivation of the coronavirus, which is the common cold, which is in everybody. Any of these tests could say we're all carrying the coronavirus, because we all are. We all have it in. Again, getting back to my point a few minutes ago, it's not that you have the virus. It's that you're healthy and your immune system keeps the disease, keeps the microbial at bay. And that's the key to this all. And you'd think that they were living through the bubonic plague, and they're not. And it's just such a psyop, the greatest psyop probably we've ever witnessed, and maybe in the history of man. I mean, they've got literally half the world believing, well, more than half of this country, because you see all the goofs wearing these masks, and I don't know. It's just, it's so insane. It's just...
it's pretty gobsmacking.
Yeah, it's gobsmacking.
They have no business using the PCR test to try and diagnose anything, much less this.
Well, yeah, even the inventor of the test said that that's not appropriate. It doesn't mean jack shit.
Yeah, it's funny. Are you guys familiar with the inventor? He, I think his name is Mullis, Corey Mullis.
Corey Mullis, yeah.
Yeah, and he was a real iconoclast, a real heretic about the whole Rockefeller scam for allopathic medicine. And my favorite quote of him is, I was researching him, and interestingly enough, he died like a couple months before they rolled out this whole scamdemic using his test, because he would have been all over saying you can't do this. And one of the best quotes I found when I was researching him is, he said it on public speech that I watched. He goes, give me 10 minutes and I'll prove what total assholes Fauci and Gallo are.
Wow.
Yeah. So he saw the whole scam. And I don't know if all the listeners and viewers understand that PCR test is useless. It literally doesn't tell you anything. And it finds one RNA snippet of anything. Could be HIV, could be SARS, could be MERS, could be you name it. And then it runs a multiplication amplification process. So the first time you find one, then it turns it into two, then it turns it into four, 16, obvious exponential growth. So supposedly between the 32nd and the 36th exponential growth, it can be pseudo-diagnostic, but it really isn't. In fact, it's got an 80% inaccuracy rate at that level, but you keep running it to the 40th time and it creates so much that at that point, everyone tests positive no matter what. We could all test positive for HIV at that point. So this is all a very malevolent sham. And it's sad that these people who hate Trump, who are wearing their masks, who are putting a mask on their mask and washing their hands and slathering their body in hand sanitizer, are just being played, I believe, in like a eugenics scam, because you'll die soon if you do that.
They're being had.
They are definitely being had.
And have you guys ever read the warning labels on the back of those hand sanitizers? Man, it's basically toxic waste.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But put that on the biggest organ of your body, you know, five times a day, because you're afraid. You know, I saw this guy just the other day, man, and he put his hand sanitizer on. And he had his groceries, so he set them down, put his hand sanitizer on, and then he sprayed the seat off with some kind of spray, and then he sprayed the bags before he put his bags in the car, and he had a mask and a face shield on. And I'm like, oh, my God.
That's insane.
Patrick, you know, you've, in this show, turned me on to some new names in esoteric. Of course, I knew about Blavatsky, but I'm really looking forward to reading Keeley and the other gentlemen.
Yeah, it's Ken Neely. Keneally. K-E-N-E-A-L-L-Y, I think.
And Michaud or something?
N-N-E-A-L-Y. Right. What?
And the other fellow was Michaud?
Jay Michaud.
Michaud. Yeah, I already have bookmarked the occult mystery site. I look forward to really investigating it. But my question is, now that you've read so many different paths and you've come to believe that Blavatsky is the most accurate, who is the greatest huckster and the greatest sham in the esoteric study realm?
Oh God, Giuseppe, I wouldn't know where to start. There's tons of them.
Well, lay out a few.
There's Maurice Doreal. He came forth with the Thoth stuff, the Emerald Tablets fraud, and some of Alice Bailey. She's full of it.
Oh, really?
All these books on the Lucis Trust and everything. No, she not with her Maitreya and this world savior coming in, all this bull.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that, yeah. And then there's a guy who claims he is Maitreya now.
Oh, that's even worse. I mean, they're just everywhere.
Yeah, so. And Alice Bailey is really hooked into the United Nations. They have the Alice Bailey meditation room in the United Nations building.
Yeah, they like her. They like her style of fraud. It's just what they want.
Wow, what a laugh.
And that whole thing with the Lucis Trust, that's strange.
Yeah.
So have you looked in, Patrick, at all to numerology at all?
A little bit. Now, I tell you what is really, it's surprisingly complicated. Because most of us do a little bit of gematria, you know, you add the numbers together and you keep reducing to one. And I just tend to do that just automatically. But if you look at Pythagorean numerology, you might be a little surprised at how deep it gets. Really, really.
Oh, Pythagoras was an amazingly fascinating individual.
Yeah, he was, according to it, he was a messenger.
You know, yesterday I saw a snippet on Twitter of a fella who had run gematria for William, I forget what his middle name was, Gates, and ran the numbers in simple gematria, and William middle name Gates came out to the number 201.
Well, that's a three.
Yeah, but 201 was event 201 with that whole scam of
right.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty interesting and clever. Yeah.
Yeah, you get numbers like 2 and 4, the even numbers. they don't have the fire of the odd numbers, the power.
Yeah, it's interesting. People search for codes. And to me, since this whole reality is some type of hologram or some type of, you could probably find truth in the phone book. There really aren't phone books anymore, but I mean, it's everywhere. We're based on what we're living. We think is real is nothing but code. So yeah, it's.
Mona Radler wanted to jump in here, and she has a comment or a question for you. Go ahead, Mona.
Yeah, for the grand illusion, right? Oh my gosh. Just to even fathom watching what society is actually bending over and kissing and licking boots for is beyond me. And that they're actually placating into it, thinking that something is going to come and save their butts. There is nothing except their own butts that has the power to be saved. So between religion, politics, ancient history, I mean, I believe that Big Devil's Tower was one of the trees to the hugest giants that was ever here. I mean, too much evidence is right there, and they want to poo-poo it all. It doesn't at all have to be science. I mean, just fact of reality. And then when you say about the children of the Common Core, I thought that was only 8 years worth. Do you think it was longer than 8 years? Because didn't Obama incorporate that?
Oh, no. That goes all the way back to before George Bush. He's the one who codified it in law, but they've been pushing the whole Sovietization of education. Charlotte Iserbeek has covered it. It wasn't called Common Core, but it was in practice going back probably even farther than 25 years.
I think,
Patrick, how far back do you think that this manipulation of the school system has gone?
I'm not really sure. That's why I just pulled 25 years out of the air, but it seems about like it to me. Back in the 90s, late 90s. But you'd have to check.
So, Mona, your investigations, especially about the giants and everything, what are your thoughts on crypto history, and what are the great truths that most people are not aware of?
Now you're calling it crypto history. What have we been thinking about in the last how many years? Cryptocurrency. I mean, it's all a sham of trying to get from that point to another point. So it's taking our minds off of the real facts of the way that things actually have been and are. I agree with, I mean, I've had visions of giants. I've had, you know, previous past life adventures with things like that. And I can't claim any of it except that why doesn't everybody else see the truth for what they are? They haven't done enough shrooms or something, man. I'm serious.
No, I agree.
I fell out of the society's idea of how I was supposed to be, because every time I tried to be in society, it failed. You know, there's only a few of us who really have an open enough consciousness to see the reality as an illusion that we're all just witnessing. And once we put our effort into it, guess what? Things come back at us. People just don't get it. It's that flipping simple. Like this Trump thing. Oh my gosh, my one friend wanted me to sign up and register to vote. I said, I haven't voted since Nader. You know, Ralph Nader. Because I see nothing that is evidence of doing, no matter how much work we put into something, of an outcome that's in our benefit. I just don't see it. So I can't play that game. I can't play that way. And Patrick, I want to say Aleister Crowley was one of the biggest foobahs for the metaphysical or, say, ancient.
Oh, I agree. I just can't think of all of them.
I love Madame Blavatsky. I really do.
Elena Petrovna Blavatsky.
What do you think about Saint Germain?
I don't know if he exists or not. He may be some shadowy character, but we don't have enough to deal with.
That's interesting, because I've read almost every one of the books about him.
Right. But who really wrote those?
I don't know, but I like Buckminster Fuller, actually.
You'll find so much written that's just wrong. You know, when it comes to the ancient teachings and people trying to tell people about the way things are and things.
What do you, all three of you, have as comments in the way that for the last 20 years, especially in music videos, in public speeches by globalist politicians, they constantly are giving Masonic hand symbols and Illuminati images in these videos, and what do you think is their intent to be so public with their secretive dark symbols?
But it's not secretive. It's to the idea where they're putting it out there because they are gaining the power of reputation. Go ahead.
Well, it is secretive because most people have no idea what they're looking at.
There's one thing I spot around here is a whole lot of Freemasonitis. And when it comes to relating all this dark occult, quote unquote, symbology and meaning to Freemasons, maybe there's some over in Europe with the French rites, which you find in the Scottish rite here. But the normal Freemasonry here has nothing to do with any of that, you know. And I will always say it's not Freemasonry; it's bad people.
Right, using
bad
the power that
stuck
we're
inside
denied,
of Freemasonry,
you know, because they've been shutting out the books. The metaphysical stores got closed over 20 years ago. I mean, we have not now in this length of time been allowed to find out the truth. So how do these children who end up with these situations happening to them? When I had my herb store, I had people coming in for metaphysical information because they knew I could tell them about time warps or the veils that are around us that people don't recognize or what's holding everything together, or that the alien, no, I'm not going to go there, or the discarnates and the different entities of those natures. There's nobody to tell these people anything. I didn't get it. I had to find it out by experience and on my own.
Hey, Patrick, when you said that, someone pointed out that there's 33 people in the chat room right
now.
Yeah,
I know that's flippy.
Yeah, I'd like you to elaborate on the idea that within the Freemason organization, there's evil people. So who are these evil people and what is their group? What are they a part of?
They're probably globalists with an agenda, but they'd be doing that whether or not they were inside of Freemasonry or not. You go into Freemasonry in this country, into the lodges, you're going to find lots of blue collar people, a lot of police, sheriffs, that sort of thing. Other just normal, not rich people. If you want to be scared of something, I would say watch out for the Lions Club and the Rotary Club, because that's where the rich guys hang out, but not in Freemasonry. Besides, there's nothing in Freemasonry that points to any of this.
Well, isn't that one of the supposed strategies that up until like the 31st or 32nd level, it's just a club for decent people, blah, blah, blah. And then when you're initiated into 33 or above, you start to you're supposedly shown what's really going on and the Luciferian satanic aspects to it all. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do have something to say about that. The 33rd degree stuff is Scottish rite only.
Right.
And it is not the primary rite in this country. This country has more of the York rite. And so not everybody goes the Scottish rite. You get raised to third degree. You can if you want, but many, many don't. And so they never get to see any of that. Now, I think that people like Albert Pike had a lot to do with that. He wrote Morals and Dogma. And I think a lot of the Scottish rite as we see it today with the 33rd degree and everything comes out of that. And that may not be for the best. I'm not sure. The jury's out on that. But in regular Freemasonry in this country, it doesn't go any higher than the state level. There is no Grand Lodge.
Oh.
The State Lodge of Louisiana is as high as it gets. The State Lodge of Idaho is as high as it gets. And so if there's stuff going on, I don't know about it.
Well, right, no, and you have to be invited into the 33rd degree. You can't earn it like the other degrees. You have to be invited, and the only place you can receive that degree is the Supreme Council Lodge in Washington, D.C.
Well, Bohemian Grove. I mean, there's all kinds of power stations that they're going to put names on. It's all by the idol god of money. That's stealing everything and destroying and making us sacrifice ourselves, and we're paying for it.
It's bad people. It's not an organization that is trying to mold people into badness. And I don't know what they're doing up in the 33rd degree, but otherwise you don't see anything of that.
Well, these bad people, which I would describe as Satanists, they do have a group. They do work together. It's not just I'm like a comic book villain. I'm Iron Man's villain, and the Red Skull is Captain America's villain. And these people do have a group and an agenda. They're following some plan, don't you think?
It's the Pope. Who has most of the money? Who has most of the power? The Queen has how much? We lose our fiat dollar from oil, and they go to gold. We're in deep poo. And people just aren't seeing it. It's all because they want the power of being the biggest and the best for an idol god, which is demonic in my world, except I like to play with money, but not in a derogatory way. See, you see what I'm saying? It's all an illusion. And it's for the idol dollar god. Look at your dollar bill in the pyramid with the eye on top.
Yeah, and I was just looking at the some of the whole, like, looking into the Queen, and apparently the royal family owns over 6 billion acres of land worldwide.
Well, I'd hate
that's
to think
too much.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, it is bizarre that there's 3 city-states, Washington, D.C., the City of London, and the Holy See in the Vatican. So there's clearly 3, those are the 3 bases of evil and serving the Satanist. And my other comment to Mona is exactly right. You know, basically money is just a efficient means of transfer. It's the energetics that are involved that make it good or bad. You can be super generous and be a wealthy, self-made man and anonymously give someone who, on the street, $10,000, and you will have made that person's life, given them another chance. Or you can be incredibly evil, as is, you know, Goldman Sachs, the BlackRock, Rothschild.
Be stealing the shoes off their feet,
right?
Because they couldn't have a dollar to pay. I mean, right. It is. That's what's happening. Look at Paradise Fires. You know that the power group is under bankruptcy, but they still are turning on and off power out there. I mean, there is so much going on against civil life or liberties to be able to live that people aren't recognizing. They're not putting two and two together. You know, like, why did the whole world shut down? Well, because somebody's paying somebody to shut it down. Because there's people in Africa who said, this is a farce. This isn't real. Why would we do this? You know, when we think Africans are ignorant. No. But anybody who's wearing a mask and going for a vaccine, I will call ignorant.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And you know, some of these so-called third world countries, they don't have the infrastructure to be able to enforce all this stuff and do all the testing. That's why it hasn't hit their country so hard,
but
which I find kind of funny.
Into India and Africa, inoculated all these children for free, killing them. Yeah. Sterilizing them. Okay, so no. There's more to it than that, and I got to go because I got a show to do. So thanks, guys.
Okay.
Oh, thanks for coming on, Mona.
Yeah, thanks for coming on,
please,
Mona.
Please join in.
Well, it's been a good show. I've enjoyed listening. All right, love you guys. Bye.
Okay. Well, Patrick, we're down to the final couple of minutes. Where do you want to take your final thoughts for today?
Let's just keep the good fight going. We have something to deal with here. It's not fun. And I'm just waiting and watching to see what pops around November 3rd. Like, what's going to be happening a week from today?
Yeah, no kidding, man. It's going to, I'll tell you what, things are going to get real crazy real quickly, no matter what happens. What do you think about this possibility that they're trying to beat the war drums with China? What do you think the possibility of some kind of conflict happening with that?
I don't know. Quite honestly, I'm more concerned with what I'm seeing going on in this country right now. I don't know who's going to have the ability to fight China if we're so split up, you know. Trump himself has so much more data. He knows so much more than we hear who do this and talk and speculate, you know, because we can just talk about what we see and what we think we know. But there's so much more going on that we don't really know. And so that's why I'm aware of that.
That's true. We're all on the outside looking in. There's no question about that. And of course, we know the president gets fed disinformation because somehow, I don't know how they do this, but they manage to get like every person that's close to the president is a member of the CFR or the Trilateral Commission. And it's been that way for a very long time.
And I think he's saying things that he knows that they just want to hear.
No doubt.
And that's why he's giving words to it. But he's playing a pretty hard game here.
Ooh.
And yeah, no one better than he to play it.
Well, look at how he placated the war hawks, the neoconservatives with Syria. Instead of actually launching an attack, he fired some aging missiles and gave them advance warning that they're coming and had very little physical human casualties and just did some damage. So that was his attempting to placate them. So he contrast that with if Hillary Clinton would have been placed as the president, we'd be in World War III by now.
We sure would.
Yeah.
We got to keep this ball rolling.
I agree. And unfortunately, we're only at the beginning of this corona nonsense. They plan on keeping it going for a couple more years, and
it's insane.
We just got to work against it. Everybody we know, man, for sure.
Unless Trump puts an end to it. You know, I expect him to start doing something in the next week or so. Because even if he were to lose, God forbid, the election, he's still president until the 21st of January.
That's nothing a good to point.
We got
to
have
that's
you back,
a good place
Patrick.
To end it. Well, thank guys, you so much. Thanks for coming on, Patrick. Great
very
discussion.
Well. Thank you.
Thanks for everyone that listened, and we will see you next week on the Wisdom Circle. Take care. Bye-bye.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed